This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, June 10th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for the Wall Street Journal. Early in the pandemic, we had a lot of questions about the coronavirus. And where did we take those questions? Well, to trusted news sources and public health officials, but also we took them to Google. On today's episode, we'll hear from David Feinberg, the vice president of Google Health. He spoke with the journal's business editor, Jamie Heller, at our Tech Health event yesterday. They discussed how Google directs people to answers to tricky health questions, as well as the company's recent push into healthcare technology. Their conversation after these headlines. Remember last year when President Trump signed executive orders targeting the Chinese-owned apps TikTok and WeChat? The administration was concerned about national security risks. The orders ended up getting blocked by federal court injunctions and then shelved by the new Biden administration. So that's where we left off. But on Wednesday, President Biden officially revoked those orders, and he signed a new order requiring security reviews of TikTok and WeChat, as well as other apps that are in foreign adversaries' jurisdiction. Here's our reporter John McKinnon speaking on last night's episode of our sister podcast, What's News?
I think in general, the Biden administration is trying to find a basis for proceeding in its review of these apps that's going to have a sounder legal footing than the actions that the Trump administration had taken. It may not sound as threatening superficially as what the Trump administration did, but I do think that they have a lot of tools to use in dealing with these threats that they perceive from these apps.
Administration officials said a government review panel is still conducting a separate review of TikTok to look into cross-border transactions. El Salvador became the first country to recognize Bitcoin as legal tender. Under a new law passed yesterday, people will be allowed to use Bitcoin to pay taxes there. The law will also compel businesses to accept Bitcoin for payment if they have the ability to process it. El Salvador has struggled for years to manage its finances and has been using the U.S. dollar since 2001. The government said that 70% of the population doesn't have access to traditional financial services, and that it's hoping that the use of Bitcoin will increase financial inclusion. And Ohio's attorney general filed a lawsuit asking a judge to rule that Google is a public utility. That designation would make it subject to government regulation under state law. The lawsuit centers on Google's tendency to surface search results that direct users to its own products rather than rivals. And it argues that Google has a duty to provide the same rights for advertisements and product placement for competitors that it provides for its own services. A spokesman for Google said the lawsuit had no basis in fact or law, and that the company would defend itself in court. All right, staying on the topic of Google, after the break, a conversation between its VP of Google Health, David Feinberg, and our business editor, Jamie Heller. They spoke at the journal's virtual health tech event yesterday. That's next.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor, C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
David, thank you so much for being with us today. When the coronavirus overcame this country, there were high hopes that some of the smarts in Silicon Valley could really make a difference and help us get out of this terrible situation. How would you grade Big Tech on how it contributed to helping this country through the crisis?
Well, first of all, Jamie, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and look forward to one day meeting, doing this in person.
In person, yeah.
So how have we done? I'll tell you what we've focused on, and I'll divide it into, well, the main category of what I think we've attempted to do. And I think we've done a pretty good job. Of course, there's always room for improvement. But what we've tried to do is get authoritative information out to everyone so they can stay safe. And I'll divide that into two categories. One is information out to individuals so they can learn about how to stay safe at home. When we were at the beginning of this, about what did it mean to social distance, or what does it mean to, did you need to wash your food? Or then it became, where can I get a COVID test? That then morphed into, where do I get a vaccine? Now we just launched today about, you know, are vaccines available in neighborhoods and how do you use the transportation to get there? So how can we get individuals information so they could stay safe? And then the second part on that information quest, whether that be on YouTube or search, was could we put data together in a privacy preserving way to help stakeholders like public health and governments make decisions. So we launched community mobility reports. This is a data set that lets governments see, are their policies working? Are people social distancing? We also launched symptom search. You know, we saw, again, in a privacy preserving way, a big increase in people searching for, what do I do about my acne? Why did that happen? A lot of people were wearing masks, so acne went up. So that's kind of a cute one. But it's also important when we see people searching for things like, I can't smell. So does that mean in this particular area, we should be worried because COVID's coming or increasing?
So it was analysis of your own data from searches.
Exactly. So that's what we've done, I think, really well. What we could do better, and this is always a balance, is how can we get that information out faster? So the CDC, for example, had a great screening tool for COVID, and we want to put it on Google. The problem we have is when we put things on Google, it can drive so much traffic that it can sometimes overwhelm places like 911 or websites. So it's always been this balance between safety and, because of our impact, making sure that the place we're sending people or the places are able to take it. So that's been the push-pull, and I wish we could go faster.
You feel like Silicon Valley might have been able to do more. I mean, there was these huge questions over what role comorbidities played and who was getting it and where they had been and who was checking into hospitals and who and what were their situation. I mean, did you ever think of like, oh, put a Google engineer in every hospital in the country and really try to help crack the code on this?
So we didn't think about putting Google engineers in every hospital in the country, but we did engage with health systems and governments in that way to give them that information. So for example, those community mobility reports are available in 135 countries. They've been downloaded, I think, over 30 million times. But that was that exact, in your question, how to get that information to governments or public health or provider systems to be able to predict what's coming next. We did a lot of work around making sure people understood where ventilators needed to be and continue to do that work around logistics currently in India around oxygen canisters. So yes, we're doing a lot to try to help those on the front line have the data and information and insights to be able to make better decisions. Now, I wish that we had the relationships with public health that we now have. So I think we're actually better prepared for what's coming next because we've now worked with these people and there's those relationships. In the beginning, we had to really establish those and, you know, earn their trust and also really listen carefully to make sure we were giving them information in a way that was useful.
And what about misinformation, which is its own controversy in the health world, specifically with coronavirus? How do you grade yourself on that?
Well, it's an ongoing problem, misinformation. And really the best way to combat misinformation is to amplify authoritative voices. And so that's really our strategy. You know, on YouTube, I think every, and I'll get quoted, but I'll be misquoted, I think every minute, there's 500 hours of video uploaded. And my number may be off, so it may be every hour. So, but whatever, there's a ton of video information uploaded every minute or every day on YouTube. So you can't review that all by human, right? So we have algorithms that look at it and we remove harmful information and raise up authoritative information. But when this first started, we really needed to engage with the healthcare community to make sure that authoritative information was available so we could really highlight it and raise it up. So that's working with the CDC around the world.
I mean, are you happy with like how fast you handle those things, or you feel it could have been different, better?
I'm never happy with how fast we handle those things. We could have always done these things faster, but again, it's kind of balancing the safety. Also, if we had had those relationships earlier, I think that would have helped. But for example, on YouTube, our COVID information page had 400 billion views. If you do a search on Google now for coronavirus or COVID or SARS-2, we bring you to a page where it has no ads. It's curated information from trusted sources. So we really took that over and made sure that people were getting that authoritative information. And when there were gaps,
side, like what about authoritative information? I mean, Facebook lately has come under criticism in some corners for first having banned certain discussions about the origins of the virus and then changing its position on that and coming under criticism in that realm. Where are you all in terms of like the lab leak theory and how you're handling that?
So the way that we handle that, a little different on search versus YouTube, but it fundamentally is what is the consensus from the authorities. And if the authority, a sense of CDC, National Health System, Mayo Clinic helps us, the WHO, that's the type of information that we want to raise up so that you see that first. Now, it's, as you say in the question, it's been fluid and it's been changing, so we'll respond in that same way.
So one of the things you told us a year and a half ago was that you are under personal directive from Eric Schmidt. You don't have to worry about making money. But since then, more recently, it's been reported that there's more pressure on Google Health to drive revenue. I mean, have things changed in the time that you've been there on that score?
Oh, no. I would say yes. There's even more pressure to have global impact. And when I say global impact, we're not talking about, you know, revenue questions. We're talking about, we have this diabetic retinopathy screening in India and Thailand, and how do we scale that to the rest of the world? We have ability through Android phones to be able to think about helping people with pregnancy and looking at gestational age, or using the phone to be able to read an X-ray for somebody potentially with tuberculosis. How do we get that around the world? That's the pressure. It's a great pressure. Some of our particular areas we're thinking have revenue potential, but I would say that comes later, very later in the discussion. We want to get authoritative information out to everyone. And we also want to make sure that Google technology, which has been so successful in our lives as consumers, can enter into healthcare to make doctors and nurses more effective so they can spend more time with patients and less time looking at computers.
And there's nothing wrong with having revenue, you know, it's, you know, a for-profit company, but it, I mean, has the focus on it within Google Health been a little bit more like, okay, let's, these are good projects, and now down the line, we've got to figure out how we're going to be monetizing them?
So maybe I bring that more than the team does. Okay. I mean, to me, if you want to be sustainable, you have to have revenue coming in so you can continue to invest and come up with better ways of doing things, or you'll become obsolete. So I keep pushing that, but that is certainly not a big part of what we're focused on. Google's been very successful in providing tools to make people's lives helpful and then figuring out how to make money on it, right? So that's what I would say we're trying to do, is really, really try to help folks, be humble in how we enter the healthcare system and respectful, make sure we get the equity and ethical issues correct, And the pressure, the real pressure is it Google scale? Is this really going to help millions or
not
billions
people, of people? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the pressure.
What is your next, I mean, we're hopefully, at least in this country, emerging from COVID, and what is your next big thing? What should we be looking for from Google Health as the next exciting things that can come down the pike?
So we have a bunch, but I'll pick one. I know Wall Street Journal's reported on before, but we're very proud of what we call Care Studio. And Care Studio is our answer to the electronic health records in the world now, because they're international, have done an amazing job of taking what was, I used to deal with paper charts and digitizing it. That's great. But they haven't done a great job in making it easy to find the information in that digital world. And they don't often talk to one another, or what we call interoperability. So we've been working on that project. Ascension came to us, said they have that issue. And in pilot, we've launched with Ascension this tool that we call Care Studio, which takes for an individual patient being cared for in one of the Ascension hospitals, we're in two of them right now, in this pilot. It takes it and normalizes all their data. They may have a different record for outpatient. There may be a different lab record. There may be a different inpatient record, but they're now in the hospital. And that doctor or nurse sees basically a Google search bar that they can type into, and they can type the way they think. They can use HGB for hemoglobin or whatever. And in seconds, just like you would do a Google search in the rest of your life, every bit of information on that patient is then brought forward in a way that's incredibly useful. The feedback has been very positive.
So thank you so much for being here. My clock is up, so I have to close it off, but it's been delightful to talk with you, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's Tech News Briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.